to begin this morning by sharing with you some thoughts about the philosophy toward counseling here at Concordia Seminary. And that will put the morning in perspective. Concordia Seminary is just that, a seminary. And the word seminary literally means seedbed or nursery, a place for growth. When you come here, we do not expect you to be ready to go into the ministry. And yet when we certify you for ministry, we certify you personally, professionally, and theologically as ready to hold the office of the ministry. Now, everyone understands the theological part, and to some degree the professional part, but what we're focusing on this morning is the personal aspects that we're dealing with. You as a person need to grow. You as a person may need to work on certain aspects of your personality or the way you conduct yourself to be a better pastor. That, like any other area in life, you have to work at it. In some areas, you can grow on your own. In other areas, you need assistance. Further, we know that when you are here at Concordia Seminary, there are a great many stresses and demands upon you. Those stresses go from the actual classwork, due dates, to field education, to work, to those of you who are married with the responsibilities of a home. There are the responsibilities of finances, etc. All of these can be a tremendous source of pressure on you. And when you're under that kind of stress, many times you need assistance in dealing with it. It is the attitude of Concordia Seminary that we want to provide counseling services for you for the specific reason that we want you to leave this institution as a better person than when you come. A person who has grown, and if there were problems, a person who has overcome those problems. We would much rather send a man into the parish ministry with that man having taken advantage of the counseling services and improved and solved some problems in his life, rather than put a man into the ministry and have those problems emerge when he is at the parish. The problems simply don't go away when you get a call. Okay. Therefore, we would rather deal with them here so that a congregation does not have to deal with them there. The counseling is for the benefit of the student so that that student is better equipped to minister as one who holds the office, to preach the word, and to administer the sacraments as a servant in the ministry of the people of God. Therefore, we offer these counseling services to you free of charge because we want to encourage you to take advantage of them. Now, as to the confidentiality question and those other items, I will leave that to Dr. Barber. Let me say a word about the profiles of ministry, again, of philosophy. Dr. Schopper may share with you some about the history of this. Let me simply say this is another area for your personal growth. It is an instrument that you take that helps evaluate attitudes about ministry. As I indicated to the student body last year, no one is going to be asked to leave this institution solely because of profiles of ministry. That is not the way this instrument is used. It is simply to reflect to you areas that you need to work on again so that you can be a better pastor to the people that you will serve. One of the weaknesses at the seminary has been personal growth. With the addition of our counseling services and the profiles of ministry, I do not believe that that is any longer the case. We now have things in place to assist men in their personal growth. So that's kind of a philosophy statement of where we go with these things. You may have specific questions, and we'll have time for that a little later. But at this point, I want to move on and let Dr. Barber and Dr. Schopper speak with you. So at this time, I'm going to ask Dr. Barber to please come up and say a few words about our counseling services.
When Dean Smith says, come up, I just ask, how high? So when we here at Concordia Seminary have attempted to put together a full-service mental health agency, center, if you will, that is also a referral service for you, and for the same reasons that Dean Smith spoke a moment ago. It's so formal in here, isn't it? It's very important that you have an understanding of what your confidentiality, what's told and what's not told, because there's a rampant paranoia here, hard to believe, isn't it, that runs through the student body. We do hundreds of hours of counseling each quarter, each year, and out of those hundreds of hours, there are two or three situations of which you will get wind. That wind usually doesn't come from us. It usually comes from the person about whom the wind is about. That's something we'll have to talk about some other time. There's a great deal of stress in the seminary community. This is a graduate-level program, and like all graduate-level programs, there is a great deal of stress. There are expectations that are given to you, and your time does no longer belong to you. You have to mix and match the stresses of your family with your responsibilities here at the seminary. There are some of you who brought issues with you to the seminary. We consider this a neat opportunity for you to be able to deal with those. We believe that almost every issue is solvable. It just takes a little work sometimes. Now, I would like to let you know who runs and who's working in the counseling center. Presently, we have Marty Lindvet, who is, if Marty would stand up here, she is my assistant and kind of runs the show on a day-to-day basis, makes a lot of decisions. But Marty does the counseling as well. Next to her is Jean Spock. It's more Polish than German, I understand. Spock. Jean is a professional counselor and is trading time for supervision, which is one of the ways that we staff this since we have no money. Thank you, Jean. Hey, and that's okay. That's okay. God has provided mightily in this effort. We also have as counselors Hank Ramsey, Sally Kesterer, and Kyle McClain. We have practicum students who come and go. Luther, the cure, thank you. Very close, dear friend. No, Luther really is a good friend. But he was just here. Practicum students go with their students with their school year, and so you'll see different counselors. There are some counselors here who will be here for like a year at a time. And so if you have what we consider to be a long-term issue, or if they happen to have a slot full, you'll be assigned to them. The way it works is this. you have an issue that pops up, you say to yourself, oh no, I can't tell anybody because if I do, they'll throw me out of the seminary. Then you get over that. And then you call Rose. And you say, Rose, I've got an issue. I need to talk to a counselor. And she'll assign a counselor to you. Now, there is floating around this confidentiality sheet that as you came in, some of you have one. If you don't, please get one as you leave. This is a form that was instituted by the administration several years ago. And I got to tell you about the administration. This confidentiality issue is a tough one for all schools everywhere because all schools are a screening institution as well as a counseling, as well as a training institution. And the counseling part of that school is caught in this bind, this rock and hard place. How much do you let slide? How much do you not? Now, the administration here has gone out of their way to make this service available to you. They have bent over backwards and forwards to provide the stuff that we need to make this a possibility. But one thing they have done that most schools have not done is that they have given permission for this confidentiality to exist in this form. Now, if you'll look through this, you can probably read the first couple of chapters there. The Dean of Student Life must be consulted in the following situations. Now, if you were in a community mental health center, this could be like the police department or something like that. Confidentiality has its limitations in all mental health settings. The first, if you're sent to the coordinator of specialized testing and counseling, that's me, for evaluation by the Dean of Student Life, there will be a waiver. The first thing you'll do is you'll sign a statement that says, I understand everything I say in here will be shared with the administration. You don't really like have a choice, right? If you're involved in criminal activity, that's a bummer. If you abuse, that's the kind of thing that also, even in a mental health setting, has to be reported to the police department. That's nothing new. Abuse of another individual, whether it be verbal, physical, or sexual, waives your right to confidentiality. Now, you know this before you come in, so if you got these issues, and you don't want them to be shared, you say to me, I need a referral. I need to work with someone off campus. Now, if you're in the process of separating from your spouse or divorcing your spouse, that's something that the Dean of Student Life probably needs to know. If you have a mental illness, this E here, this has been a classic because we pulled this together and we were so proud of ourselves when we passed it out, and then we discovered a loophole. The students discovered a loophole. The loophole is this. Well, we tried to get rid of it. A mental illness. I used to just say mental illness. A mental illness such as schizophrenia, manic depression, or other psychological disorder that requires hospitalization or up to 3 missed classes. So this came out. Now we got this other loophole. What does that mean? A quarter? A year? A lifetime? What does that mean? Gentlemen, if you have schizophrenia, the last problem you got on your mind is making it to the 4th class. You know what I'm saying? So this is one of those, if you got a major issue that hits you, one morning you wake up, you don't know where you are. You don't know anybody around you. Call Rose. And I will discuss what happens from there. Now, if you're going to harm yourself accidentally or otherwise, or if you're going to harm someone else, there is no mental health setting in which that isn't the reportable kind of thing. Not only do we have to report this to the Dean of Student Life, he's just stage one, we have to report this to others. Now, this is particularly true for homicidal thoughts toward professors. that's an immediate call to Dean Smith. All the others may take some time in the afternoon or something. Now, marital infidelity is an issue that has to be dealt with because there are other issues going on, both with the marriage and with your own personhood, suitability, and so forth. So I will kind of leave it at that, and we're going to have questions later in the show, and I'll turn this over to Dr. Schaffer. Is that...
Thank you, Dr. Barber. I'm the advisor on personal growth, and I would like to see, first of all, how many of you are first-year students? Second year? Fourth year? Oh, okay. Because each of you have received some different information from me, And so I kind of wanted to know what it was, that, you know, what I should say or where I should get going here. My beam in is in pastoral counseling. I'm not a psychologist. I walk on the fine line between theology and psychology. And since we believe in the two kingdoms, I kind of walk on the line and go one way and then the other way, and that's kind of the way I work out what I do with the students. I have a great interest and have studied much psychology. My wife and I went to a seminar on multiple personalities this summer in Vancouver, which I found to be very interesting. And one of the things that I learned there was that you can tell if you're a multiple personality if you're in group therapy and you're the only person there. Which, also, they had an interesting thought on Alzheimer's that one of the nice things about Alzheimer's is that you get to meet a lot of new people. And you also can hide your own Easter eggs if that's what you like to do. So the question is, what am I doing here? Each morning I ask my secretary. Call Rose, yes, I need to call Rose. Luckily, she's real handy right next door. I do work with the 1 Timothy 3 issues, and this 1 Timothy 3 that is the kind of foundation for my work. Although I use the Profiles of Ministry, which has been put out by the Association of Theological Schools, it has to be subject to 1 Timothy 3, because 1 Timothy 3 talks about the characteristics of a pastor. That not everybody that comes off the street is developmentally able to be a pastor. That pastors are to have specific characteristics, and if you go back and look at them, they're interesting because the majority of them are all interpersonal characteristics. Hospitality, how you treat your family, how you relate to other people, you're being a good repute and, you know, having your integrity about your personality and your faith and your life and having some dignity about you, some orderliness, some sensitivity, some sensibility, some sobriety about how you function. If you look at those characteristics and ferret them out and study the Greek, you will find that they're very, very interesting, and they cover many, many different facets of being a pastor and being, you know, someone who can relate to others in a way that is winsome, in a way in which the gospel is not hindered, but indeed that the gospel is forward as it is kind of cradled and comes through this personality. Objectively, theologically, we would say, well, the gospel, the law and the gospel, the word is the word. Therefore, it will come through objectively no matter what you are, and that is true. But we also are aware that what you are and what I am can have an effect. We can negate the very gospel we preach, and that's what we have to be careful of. Somebody asked me yesterday in a seminar, what is it? Why are we doing this today? Well, the Council of Presidents got this program going, and I think it's a result of several things in our society today. Our society has less tolerance for professionalism than it used to have, and that's just the way it is in every field. Our society is under more pressure. Our lay people are under more pressure to perform, so they kind of project that out and expect us to perform also. There's a growing attitude that people ought to get it together and do a professional task no matter what they are doing in their personal lives, and that affects us. An interesting study that came out from the Alban Institute about people who get terminated in ministry, and this study was done in 1980 among some Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and United Church of Christ people, and what they found was that 43% of the people who got terminated as pastors got terminated because they went into congregations where there was great stress, congregational stress already, and they did not have the systemic ability to work with that congregation, and they got in the middle of it, and eventually they lost power. They were terminated as pastors in those denominations, which I would say, boy, it's important to understand systemically systems and how they work, and the congregation being a very complex system at that. The second thing was interesting about this study was only 10% were terminated because of incompetence. They didn't know how to preach, or didn't preach satisfactorily, or administrate, or they had dirty desks, as some people that I know do. And the third thing was their unwillingness to work. 10% of them could not take the lack of structure in the parish. It is easy in a very structured environment as this to go to class, do your thing, do what somebody wants, walk up here when you want, when you need to, all these things that somebody tells you to do. But what if when you get out there and nobody knows what you do all day, except you go make a hospital call, or perhaps you have a secretary who kind of knows what you do. But some people can't take that unstructuredness, so 10% of them just kind of stopped working full-time and got caught. The fourth factor, the moral is, the fourth factor is that 46% of the people who were terminated failed because of their lack of interpersonal skills. They had interpersonal difficulties with others, which is the same thing as in the professional realm outside of ministry. It's estimated that 80% of the people who get fired because of interpersonal difficulties, not because of lack of competency. It's the same thing. It's just, it applies to us because we're part of this society also and part of this world. So what do we do? Well, for those of you who are fourth-year students, I passed out the total program because the first-year students have already seen it and have already talked about it. The second-year students know about it, but I changed a couple things that they don't know about, so I may mention it. But for fourth-year students, I just want to say it this way. When the student comes in now, and I won't be dealing with you fourth-year students because it's too late. You've had your vicarage, you've been out, you're back, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. This is a developmental program. We start from the bottom, we work up. When they come in, they take profiles of ministry, and we talk about it, focus on goals for field work. Second year, they take Myers-Briggs, we talk about it, focus on goals for vicarage. Third year, a PLM observation form is sent out to the vicarage side, which comes back. Fourth year, they take the stage two PLM. We see how they're doing. I process the vicarage with each fourth-year student in the light of POM, and then we talk about goals for their first year in ministry. And that's basically what I do. It's not a lot of testing at all, but it's testing that is really not pathological testing, as you might receive if you would go to the counseling office or if you go somewhere where somebody's going to work with you and try to figure out pinpoint exactly where you're having a problem. But this is more of a functionalist thing where you say, what areas can I work in to improve systematically how I relate to others as a person? And then I kind of set up these groups with the hope that you will be wise enough to see if there are anything or any groups in which you would like to grow. And I will say at this time, the assertiveness group, which I set up for Mondays, is full. It has been full for a week now. But I'm making a second group available on Tuesday nights in place of my advanced group. And I'm moving the people who signed up for advanced group to be with Chaplain Hempel. There are some openings in some of the groups, especially the conflict utilization group. I would encourage some of you to get into, or any of you who want to work on your conflict utilization skills. Because when you get out there, if you go into a congregation where there is a high amount of conflict, how you approach it is going to be not only affect the future of the congregation, it may affect your future. And obviously that is something important and dear to us all, as we want our future to rest on our ability to relate effectively God's holy word, law, and gospel to the people of God. Thank you.
Let me say a final word before we open it up for questions and answers on the topic that's probably the most difficult, and that is when a student leaves Concordia Seminary. I want to assure you that this is never done lightly. It is never done until there has been a great amount of investigative work into the situation, consultations with many people about how we can go about assisting the student, that most students who leave Concordia Seminary are not told that they can never come back, but in most cases are told that over a length of time, they need to receive some further counseling or work on specific things, and then they are welcome to reapply to Concordia Seminary. So you can hold those thoughts likewise with what has been said this morning. It is the last thing that we want to see happen to any man, is that he fail here at the seminary and have to withdraw. But we also know that that is a reality at times. We do not like to see it happen because, as I have said before, we need your money. Now, in order to let you ask the questions that you have about this topic, we're going to ask you to, the floor is open. You can ask anything you'd like to of any of these folks or of me. If we've answered your problems and calmed your fears, so be it. I can assure you, in working with these people, that we are only here to assist you in your growth and readiness for the ministry. Are there questions that you have? Okay, would you come to the microphone so that the other people can hear your questions? Why don't you answer from there? It's easier.
I have two questions I'd like to ask Dr. Schopper. One, this one handout, Scripture Formation, does this apply to the new Seminary 1 class, the first-year Seminary 1 class that just took these tests, these percentages that are on this page?
I'm glad you brought that up because I forgot to talk about that. This handout that I mentioned or that I passed out or left at the door this morning is a reflection of last year's Sem 1 class.
Oh, that's good.
And the reason I... Go ahead with your second question.
Okay.
The second question I have is,
I thought if this was, in fact, ours, since I'm a first-year student, I was going to ask if you had the results, when would we be getting them for our own individual scores?
Oh, okay. No, it is from last year's class because I won't get the first-year group profile until I have interviewed every one of the students and forwarded all that information to be compiled, which is going to take a couple months.
Okay, well, this seems like it was a little early, and that's why I was concerned.
Okay. I would say, but since you brought it up, I want to say just one thing about this spiritual formation sheet. And that is that I wanted you to note that if in last year's Sem 1 class that there is one category, the P-I-E-T, which reflects religious piety or religious, your personal devotional life or relationship with God and how satisfied you seem to be with it, that 30% of the students scored in the very likely category, indicating they were well satisfied with their personal devotional life and their relationship with God. 45% scored in the likely category, indicating they were basically satisfied but knew that there could be improvement. And 25% scored in the possibly to the unlikely category, indicating that they were dissatisfied with their personal devotional life and their relationship with God. So I had a group on devotional life, spiritual devotional life last spring. And I had three people come. Well, so I didn't have it this fall because, you know, I want to have more people in the groups and obviously the people who do not feel a high need to work on the situation. But the reason I brought it up here is because of the fact that when I talked with the Sem 1 students last year, it seemed to me that whenever they talked about their personal life, both devotional life, they always related to law rather than gospel. And it really struck me. If the gospel is to predominate among us, then why, in our personal devotional life, should we always talk about it in terms of law? It didn't make any sense. So it seems to me either the seminary professors need to address this in their work with you as students, or you students need to address it to yourselves about your personal devotional life and whether or not it indeed consider law and gospel and what that means for you. Thank you for bringing up that area that I omitted.
I'm not sure who would answer this one. Are there going to be any plans in the future to incorporate any different types of tests for students, such as the MMPI?
You mean in terms of evaluation or formation?
In terms of formation, no.
Admissions, yes, there are discussions at this time as to whether to administer some kind of personality inventory before admission, okay? And that would only be implemented if the two seminaries jointly would move in that direction. But it is in discussion stages. At this time, we're not sure where those are going to take us, but it's being discussed as one of the pieces of data in a file of a man who is asking for admission to the seminary. Okay? So those of you that have been admitted, fear not. Alexander, you are next.
The question that I had is probably just those two men back there. I'm trying to get an understanding of the services that you offer. What you would like us to do if we had a personal situation, a personal problem that we're grappling with, or a conflict in our life that might affect our ministry, is to make an appointment to see a counselor here?
That's correct.
And then how many counselors do you have, and I guess how many weeks would it take to work through whatever?
It would depend on the, I'm starting to make a joke, and never mind. About you mean you or someone else, but that's an old therapy joke. we personally have six therapists, if I'm remembering correctly, besides myself. I'm sorry? Including me. Six, including me. We have done that and so that we can have evening hours as well as we try to stay away from weekend hours. So we provide the full service. If you went to mental health agency, any like testing, individual family, children's issues, school educational issues, educational testing, and so forth, we can either do it or see that it gets done.
Now, would it be the same thing as like going to psychiatrists?
Well, we have a psychiatrist that we consult with, so that we would refer you to a psychiatrist. The difference with a psychiatrist is that they give medication.
At no charge, or?
Well, no. No, we give counseling at no charge. Medication is anything that's done off campus we have no control over unless I call in a favor or something. Somebody owes me, I'll get them to do that. But nobody owes me anymore. Over the past couple of years, I've used up all my favors. So if you go see a psychiatrist, they would charge you. A psychiatrist will give you medication, but very little counseling. Psychiatrists work in conjunction with counselors, psychologists, and so forth, and we do the actual work. They just give the medication. Other questions? Oh, okay.
Hey, we had spoken a lot about students in counseling,
yes.
But I was wondering what support groups and counseling opportunities there are for families and marriages and the like.
Okay. There's a great many, and I'm going to let Dr. Barber speak to that, but I want to assure you that we are acutely aware that wives and even children have problems and need this kind of assistance. It is offered free to them likewise. We are also aware that many of the wives here do not want to see male counselors, and that's why we have female counselors on our staff for them. As to what's offered, you want
to... Gosh, what can I add to that? Anything, any mental health need that you have, if you could, for any member of your family, that would not be Uncle Bob, but your immediate family, would, if you contact us, if we can't do it, we will find a place who can. And we work very hard to do it because it's at no charge. Thanks. Good question.
Dean Smith, I wonder if you can say a few words to help clarify Paul's words to Timothy about being above reproach and how that applies to our pasts, maybe, and then what happens when we get into the parish and problems come up, what avenues we have to work on those problems.
Okay. You probably would be a little surprised if you knew the number of calls that I receive about students, about what they've done in their pasts. Most of them are absolutely insignificant. Most of them are blown out of proportion. I do look into those briefly. Most of them, it doesn't take long. And then at that point, I return the call to those people and become your advocate. Okay? And I want you to be aware of that. Some of it is just the unfortunateness of original sin. But if there is something in someone's past that they have hidden from us, something that, if it were known, would make it impossible for that person to serve in the church. In other words, it's just over the line. It's just simply over the line. And even though it's in the past, it's, you know, you can't get rid of it. Unfortunately, there are those kinds of things in life. Then the seminary will have to deal with that. The seminary will have to deal with that. Because it is unfair of us to allow a student with that kind of difficulty to go through an entire seminary education and then be denied placement because the Council of Presidents will not place you because of that issue. Therefore, at that point, and I want to say this, we are not saying that that person is not a forgiven Christian for whatever has occurred. But Mike was exactly right. There is the scriptural statement above reproach. And sometimes, unfortunate as they may be, there are men who are forgiven. But because of that, they are not able to serve in the office of the ministry. The only requirement for the office of the ministry is not being a forgiven Christian. Scripture puts other standards. Therefore, we have to weigh those standards. And we have to weigh the student against those standards. But I want to assure you that this seminary does everything to defend you against any scurrilous or false statements made against you because somebody just doesn't like you. Okay? But if it's just clearly over the line, then the seminary has to deal with it. Because we're not going to get into a vicarage placement or final placement situation and have that come up and that be the end of it. You must remember, gentlemen, this seminary does not place men into the church. The Council of Presidents do. And the Council of Presidents are becoming more and more intense in their examination of students and whether or not they should be placed in the church. Okay? Anything else? Go ahead, John. You'll get here first. So.
I just returned from vicarage, at which point there are a multitude of evaluations, both written form and in the just kind of a observation form by members of the congregation.
Yes.
And I understand not having, speaking somewhat from ignorance, not having seen the evaluations that will be asked for by the congregational members, it occurs to me that at times a person can appear something that he's not, and that sometimes such evaluations may be somewhat superficial. For example, that if I smile and am perceived as friendly, many other things are thought to be good and in good repair about me. And I was curious, since in two respects, the fieldwork supervisors to evaluate goals and so forth, and the vicarage supervisor and members of the congregation are to also evaluate the students, what kind of preparations or how these evaluations are weighed and so forth. I find that somebody might evaluate my work, but that's really far from what they conclude. It's really far from who I really am or what the truth really is.
If you're speaking about the vicarage observation form, field observation form that will be sent to the parish, the field observation form it will be requested that it's filled out by five people. One, the pastor. Second, the chairman of the congregation. Third, the chairman of the board of education. Fourth, one other staff member. And fifth, a layman chosen by you. And the idea is that you have a little bit of control over it. Also that it is the reputable people in the congregation. We're not asking someone who happens to come in every 6 weeks to worship and has an opinion about you, but people with whom you have worked closely during the past year. The second thing I want to mention is the fact that even if you are not what they say you are, it's important that you know what they say. Because what they say is what you're projecting. And we may see ourselves in one way and not realize that we are actually projecting something else to people. So that type of feedback could be invaluable for your further formation and just for your self-awareness. But if there are five people doing it, I doubt it that I think that even among themselves, they will kind of balance each other out. And then secondly, I would hope that that feedback would be received as something helpful for you.
You were next.
I was going to ask if schizophrenics will be reported twice, but the question I do have in mind is, if a student, seminarian, goes into the counseling center a few times over the course of his education here, will that stuff show up on the student's resume later on in life as he considers calls to other churches?
Absolutely not. I do keep records because I'm bound by law to do so because I'm licensed in Missouri. The records that we keep are confidential unless or until something on the sheet that you already know of ahead of time is mentioned. And then we work together as to how that information is disseminated. But even so, there's not any kind of record like that that's kept on you, like a resume that goes out. But there's this mythical file that we keep, and I think Dean Smith keeps one at home, but it's not really a part of any... I'm just kidding. There is no mythical file, and I don't want to perpetuate that myth at all. There's academic records and your field work. I'll let you talk about that.
There are basically three sets of files on every student at the institution. One's in the registrar's office, academic records. One's in the field education office, field education and vicarage records. One is in my office, and the thing in my office basically is generated by admissions and contains only the data that was collected on you at admissions, and we get grade reports and put them in your file. Okay? So that kind of, even if that information was in your file, it would not be shared with anyone. It would not be shared with the district president. Okay? It would not.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Jonathan?
I just wanted to make a suggestion. I think it would be helpful to maybe come up with a set of guidelines of what the seminary hopes us as seminarians to grow to be, kind of like what the rules are as far as when you get out in the parish, what do you want of us? And that way we have something that we, you know, something very specific that we can read and that we can work toward without just having to try to wing it and try to figure out exactly what you want us to become, have more specific guidelines on that.
I would direct you at this time towards the goal statements that are printed in the front of the catalog. They are a very thorough statement. I have often been asked for a list of rules and regulations for students. That's the student handbook. There is a unique thing about students. And that is, no matter how long the list of rules, because of original sin, they will think up things that are not on the list of rules. Okay? So there can never be an all-inclusive list because of your creativity and uniqueness. but we can certainly look at that. I think some of that has been discussed quite thoroughly in the curriculum review. What is the goal? What should a student be like? Mm-hmm. What are the minimum requirements of an entering pastor in the parish? And I know they have done some of that work, and that may come out when curriculum review and design comes up with a new design, et cetera.
I wasn't really thinking about rules. Rules are more negative, what we shouldn't do. I was thinking
right.
about positive, what you would like, you know, what the seminary hopes us to become.
Right. Okay, anything else? Oh, the president's coming.
Being in a class that's been significantly whittled down in size, we have, I've heard quite a few questions come up, and I wanted to see if you would like to address them. The first one was regarding a student advocacy program. Maybe better put, what is the student's recourse? You've addressed that a little bit. I was wondering if you could walk us through that process.
Yes.
Second question is, what is your philosophy regarding a student support and or follow-up program? There are some students who we believe have left here who, if they had had a little bit more encouragement, they may have stayed, or maybe a follow-up done with them to encourage them to come back. What is your philosophy regarding that?
Okay.
And then last is simply an issue, if you so choose, I'd like you to address, and that's there are many friends of students who have been terminated against their will, who continue to convincingly present their story, which, of course, runs counter to yours. What would you advise us?
Okay. First matter, the matter of what is a student's recourse. If you are dismissed by Concordia Seminary, I am the unfortunate one that has to bring that news to you. Okay? If you do not agree with the decision, you have the right to appeal. This is clearly spelled out in the academic catalog. You have a right to appeal to the president of this institution. The president then can take it in two different ways. The first, he can remand the issue to a faculty committee, or he can deal with the issue directly himself. Once the president, however, deals with it, his decision is final. Okay? So you do have an appeal. It is not an absolute given. You are not without appeal or recourse. Okay? The second item has to do with students who have withdrawn, follow-up, etc. Gentlemen, withdrawing or being dismissed from Concordia Seminary is a traumatic event. It is traumatic because a lot of hopes and dreams end. It's not only the students, it's parents, it's home congregation, etc. We are acutely aware of those things. However, what has been learned over the years is the best thing for the student is to return to those who love him, family, home, etc. Because at that point, be it the difficult decision of a student electing to withdraw or a dismissal, they do not want the assistance of the seminary at that time. In fact, we are the last people they want to hear from. That's just the dynamics of the situation. In many, many cases when this kind of event occurs, since the withdrawal of a student from Concordia Seminary is considered a public domain piece of information, now not the reasons for, but the fact that it has occurred, I will call the pastor of their home congregation so that he can be alert and ready to help the student through the situation. He will be much better equipped to do so than anyone here at the seminary. So we do try to provide what we can. Certainly, if a student requests to talk to someone, we will be happy to provide that, but in most cases, they want to leave this campus as quickly as possible. The third issue was, what do you do when you are confronted with a student who is in this situation, and he tells his side to the story, and you are led to believe that some horrible injustice has been committed here, and that the seminary is the guilty party? You will learn very quickly as parish pastors the truth of that old axiom: there are two sides to every story. Anyone individually always interprets things to the positive in their way. If you come to me and ask me what has happened, the thing that puts me at the biggest disadvantage is I can't tell you. Otherwise, I break that student's confidentiality, which puts the seminary in a position that it can't defend itself. But I can assure you that if it were possible, there has not been one of those cases since I had been here that I do not firmly believe that if I could present all the evidence to you, you would not have made the same decision. But unfortunately, I think the thing that you have to listen for in any situation of that nature is simply know that there is probably more information, and that it is very difficult to cast judgment on the seminary based upon the very appeal of the student during a very emotional time in their life. And you, as one who will be called to judge these kinds of situations in the parish, will learn that there's usually more data out there, and you need to collect that before you cast a judgment. Unfortunately, we cannot reveal that to you. The only thing I can tell you is the faculty of this institution has been called by the church to make those decisions. And as unpleasant as they sometimes are, we would be remiss in our duties if we did not. And the ones who would pay the price are not the students, but the church. Because pastors, men studying for the ministry, studying to be pastors, who have problems of that nature are going to create serious problems in the church and affect lots of lives. We are the institution that is to help screen men so that that doesn't happen. That's the difficult side. On the other side, we are dedicated to helping students to prevent that from happening by counseling, etc., as much as possible. Okay? That answer your questions, Marty? Anything else? Our time's about up. I thank you for coming. Tell your friends the truth, okay? And I thank you for coming, and I hope it's assisted you, and we're here to serve you, and we are dedicated to that. Thanks.